Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. A new semi-professional ballet company will be making its big stage debut next weekend. Ballet La Crosse will be performing Marushka and the Four Seasons at the Weber Center for the Performing Arts. Here to talk about the performance and Ballet La Crosse is Misty Laune. She's founder and owner of Misty's Dance Unlimited and the executive director of Ballet La Crosse. Also, Kennett Oberle. He's the artistic director and choreographer with Ballet La Crosse. Laune first talks about the need for a semi-professional company in the area.
We're in the perfect area because we're too far away from the big cities, and we're just isolated here. So if you go to Minneapolis, even Madison, Milwaukee, you can find some really great professional and semi-professional ballet opportunities. And we're just far enough away where kids are not going to drive for that kind of opportunity. So being isolated here, and we had a large enrollment. We enroll about 750 kids at our school, and we have been thriving in the jazz, the tap, the contemporary. We had a large performing group. We had competitive lines, community programs, but we didn't have a true classical department. Through the relationship with Mr. Kennett, we were able to identify that we had kids that are just wired for classical dance. So we wanted to provide them the same developmental opportunities that we were giving the kids who were wired to tap and wired for urban dance or the jazz or the new contemporary styles. So bringing him in really has given a lot of kids a voice who maybe were just able to pick up a ballet class here or there, but now they're able to go the distance with it.
So what exactly does semi-professional mean? How does that differ from a professional company? Or how does that differ from students who are just taking ballet classes?
I think the purpose of Ballet Cross in our mind is it's a training company. Whereas these kids, they're not professional, they're not being paid, they're kids. They're 15, 16, 17, 12, 13, so forth. They're learning what a professional dancer is like, what they go through to put a ballet together and to perform it. And they're learning also all different sides of it, how to take care of themselves through rehearsal periods. What is a rehearsal period? How much commitment does it take? All those sort of things that prepares them for a career in a larger city like L.A. or New York or Pittsburgh or whatever. It's also an opportunity for these kids to partake in offering the community true repertoire. I mean, when you see a recital, it's different. It's about everybody gets on stage. It's about every class, and you have a two-minute slot to do something, to show off to the parents what you can do and so forth, which is important. I mean, that's where these kids first get the performance bug in them. But this is about not about, you know, just showing off the kids. It's about learning about repertoire. You can do tragedy in ballet. You can do comedy in ballet. You can do abstract in ballet. You can do works that are 20 minutes long. You can do works that are music-based. You can explore different composers that you wouldn't think would be, you know, balletic, such as Mahler or Dvorak or Arvo Pärt, you know, let alone the classics like Mozart, Beethoven, and Bach, which are also important for the kids to know. So I'm a very musical person. I enjoy music. Music is very important to me, and that's one of the main things I have to offer the company is a musical perspective on what we're doing. It's for people who don't normally go to see, who don't have family members or don't have friends in the ballet. They just want to go see dance. You know, they want to go see a ballet because they want to be touched, like you would in Milwaukee, whatever, but you don't necessarily know anybody in the cast. So I wanted to be able to offer something to the community that would be able to offer a broad spectrum to those who are not involved at Misty's, to those who are not involved in dance, but would be touched by the art form. And then for the kids to be able to know that out there are people who are just coming to see the ballet, you know, so you're going to have to reach beyond yourself and be able to touch them emotionally as an art form.
So with this company being, in a way, a springboard maybe onto another professional company,
yes.
I mean, have you worked with students in the past who have considered a professional career in dance, and do you think that this will open up those opportunities
more?
Yeah. You bet. We've had plenty of students go on at the collegiate level or to regional companies, and that's very exciting for us. But we've always been launching kids, as I said, into the jazz, contemporary, into the college dance teams, and we hadn't yet created a springboard for kids developmentally to launch into the classical arena. So this is very exciting for us. And we do, as we look at the cast right now, we have 70 plus kids involved in Ballet La Crosse. There are definitely kids that are just hardwired for this and they're excited about it. We sent kids last summer to a pre-professional training camp in Connecticut. It's called Nutmeg Ballet. So we are just seeing the first fruits of the time that the kids are spending in this program is very exciting.
It takes 10 years to make a dancer. We have a very talented group, especially in the 12, 13, 14, 11-year-old size, especially. I mean, they're on all spectrums, but in that group is a large bunch who really are gung-ho. And so they're in their two and a half years of training with us, and they've come such a long way, and we're very excited in 5 years from now what they'll be like. It's a brick-by-brick process, building a classical dancer. But one other element that I failed to mention is also adding on, hence the word semi/professional, meaning that we do hire in some professionals to work alongside with them. For example, in Marushka, we're working with Sasha York, who is a principal dancer with Ballet Nebraska, that's just a start for us, and hopefully maybe in the future we'll add one or two or three more, whatever.
And that's the person who will be playing the lead male role? I don't know if I have the terminology correct.
But.
And it's also an education for them to work alongside professionals, mm-hmm. too. You can't imagine, it's things are taught that are unsaid. You can't teach, you can't just sit down and say, here, this is what you have to be professional, now do it. They have to see it. They have to see it and experience it. It's unsaid. A lot of classical dance training is unsaid.
There's a culture to it that is totally different than regular dance studio culture. As Mr. Kennett mentioned, dance studio culture leads to a community performance or to a recital. And it's pretty formulaic. You come in and you take your weekly 30-minute class, or you take class a couple times a week. The goal is to produce a 3-minute dance, and you'll have your costume, and we put all of these dances together, and it's primarily for the parents. So it's just there's a formula to that. And this is much more three-dimensional, and bringing in this kind of experience to the kids, they're going to be picking up on the culture of professional dance. And that's something that you can't sit down and have a workshop in. This is how you take class. This is how you conduct yourself in rehearsal. This is how you care for yourself. This is how you close the end of class and show your courtesy and respect. And they're also learning about what it takes to put on a production. And when I say it's three-dimensional, it is so much more so than recital. In a recital, we're ordering all of the costumes, and they're coming out from the East Coast. So we simply measure the kids, send in an order, and the sparkles show up. For this production, we actually have a head seamstress and an entire crew of seamstresses that are spending every Saturday afternoon. We transform the studio into a costume shop. So we're creating costumes, and we're building fabulous sets, and we're flying in backdrops, and we're bringing in Marley, and we're bringing in the professional artists. We're having an actual playbill. So there's so much more depth to this production that they may not be able to see in a traditional recital experience.
And I must say that the amount of volunteerism has been amazing.
Phenomenal.
I was wondering about that.
Missy and I are here sitting at the table, and yes, she's ahead of it all, and I came up with the steps, and a wonderful woman named Amanda Shams has been behind the scenes making everything else happen, and my wife has been coaching, but still there are a battery of people who are sewing,
leagues
who are building and giving up their valuable time and being excited about it. And this is also exciting to me. So it's a big group effort, absolutely, mm-hmm. To do this completely, and it takes a lot of dedication and love from everybody. And part of our job is to keep those people still loving it so they come back.
And that's a big distinction between that and the standard dance school experience, because in the standard dance school experience, you really can drive up, drop off your child, run to festival, come back after class, you get your costume, and you just really have to plug into your slot at recital time. But this really is a whole family. It's taking a village to raise up this ballet. It's very hands-on, very multidimensional.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about the new Ballet La Crosse. My guests are Misty Lowne. She's the founder and owner of Misty's Dance Unlimited and executive director of Ballet La Crosse, and Kenneth Oberle. He's the artistic director and choreographer with Ballet La Crosse. I would imagine that for the dancers themselves, it's a little more of an intense experience. Do the dancers
Absolutely.
Have to audition to become a part of this? And what more is expected from them outside of your typical ballet dance class?
Absolutely. So all of the children went through an audition process, which was very much like what they can expect to be a part of if they're going to venture out beyond the studio. And I think that's an important piece of the education process as well. In addition to going through the audition, they're going to be increasing the amount of ballet classes they're taking per week, because the demands on the body, even at a young age, are going to require that they're trained up and that they're physically ready for the demands of the task. So everything is up a level for them. And then, of course, we have our all-day-long Saturday rehearsals.
Well, we start with a workshop in the summer. That's a 3-week 5 days a week, and it's a simulation of a professional company schedule. I mean, they have class at 9 o'clock in the morning to 10:30 every day. It's an hour and a half class. That's how what a ballet company would do, with a 15-minute break afterwards, and then 5 to 6 hours of rehearsals. And those schedules are all pre-done, so the kids aren't art and everything, depending what they're casted as. So they're coming and they're going. Some of them are there. The principals would be there probably all day long. And we got the ballet done in 3 weeks as per our schedule. Then we have our Saturday and Thursday rehearsals where we keep the ballet live and tweak it and keep you know rehearsing it and cleaning it and so forth. So that's also part of it. You know, when you're a professional company, you will oftentimes create your next year's rep a year earlier, and then it goes put on ice. Then you're doing other ballets that were created the year before that, and then you bring the new ballets off of the ice, you know, 3 or 4 weeks beforehand, and start rehearsing them. So your mind has to be like a real encyclopedia and be able to file all those things away. Very typical in the life of a professional dancer, but this is the age where they learn that.
And beyond learning what it's like to be part of a professional company, what sort of values does being a part of something like this instill in the dancers?
It's really exciting for them to be a part of something where they have ownership in it and they're creating it. I mean, the kids really treat this like it's their own. And if somebody's missing, we have understudies. And you may see a 12-year-old teaching an 18-year-old because the 12-year-old stepped in and the 18-year-old couldn't be there. So she has ownership of that. She's going to make sure that that person knows their part and they're responsible for their costumes. And they're really just very involved on every level. And I think when you're learning about being part of a team, you understand that it takes a lot of dedication. And these are really core values, you know, teamwork, dedication, fall down, get up, perseverance, take it to the finish line. So whether or not they become professional dancers, these are qualities that every employer would want of their employee, or every husband would want of a wife, or vice versa. I mean, you're teaching invaluable life lessons that will carry far beyond the stage, regardless whether or not they make the stage a home for life.
And you have your first performance coming up with Ballet La Crosse. Can you talked a bit about it, Kenneth, already.
Well, it's called Marushka and the Four Seasons. It's based off an old Slavic fairy tale. And my wife told me that fairy tale like 30 years ago. And I always thought that idea was would have been a great ballet someday. Never had the opportunity to put it together until now.
So you've created this ballet.
Yes, I'm the choreographer for it. Mm-hmm. Just now. I mean, I wanted to create it 30 years ago, but the opportunity needed to come, and everything comes at the right time. So that got filed away in the back of my mind. It's actually called Marushka in the 12 months, but of course, for stage reasons, it's easier and more theatrical to have four seasons. And there are various versions of it. So for those who will go looking up online, there is the Czechoslovakian version, which is much more violent and more one-sided. And the Russian version, which is the one we're using, has is much more human. It's a story about learning that every human being has equal value. And no matter whether you're rich or poor, king or queen, or peasant of a village, you're equal value deep down inside. So everything else is just clothes. You know, so that's exactly what this story is about. And we have two leading parts in this, the Princess Ekaterina, and which is a marvelous comic role, and of course Marushka, which is kind of a short name for Maria, you know, in Russian. And it starts out as a Cinderella story. It's typical, the orphan living with a stepfamily. Stepfamily mistreats the orphan. She does all the dirty work, you know, not appreciated, that sort of thing. So it has that same exact situation. From there, it gravitates into a whole different variation of that, where we get involved in wandering in forests with spirits of seasons coming and changing the forests into the summertime from wintertime, and there's a flower involved, which is impossible, that does not grow in wintertime, but the princess wants it now, and so it gets very convoluted into that, and Marushka, through the spirits, makes this miracle happen for the princess, and then there is certainly, for the princess, there are lessons for her to learn about her personality. Both roles are really deep character studies, and we have two very talented students who are very good actresses, both of them, Abby Inglet and Kara Ruff. I'm very blessed to have them both. They've both gone way beyond and doing their own research and digging down into their own souls and finding these characterizations and making it a part of them. And that's exactly what this ballet lacrosse is about, giving this opportunity for the kids to find out what else they have deep down inside of them. And choreographers today just don't ask a whole lot spiritually of dancers. They'll ask a lot physically. Can you get your leg up? Can you do five pirouettes? Can you do this really jazzy and really, really flashy? Can you bring about the wow factor? And we have forgotten that all different kinds of bodies can dance. It's about the way you move. It's not about your facility, so to speak.
And the emotion that you exert.
And the emotion that comes out of it. And that's what theater is. You are opening a window to some sort of perception of which you touch the audiences with an idea of which they bring home with them, and that will affect their own personal universes. And that's what I've always been preaching with these kids and with this production. And these two girls have really gone the extra mile to surprised me. In fact, I just sit back and just watch and smile now to watch how they've gone and added their own dimensions of the characters. And I don't coach them anymore. I just guide them and say, oh, that looks good. Or add a little more here. Or you know, think about that a little more. Go home and do your homework and add it from yourself. And they'll come back and they'll do that. And that really warms my heart to
see
that.
And that's the kind of ownership that we're talking about when you say that the kids are fully vested in the entire production. And that's not only happening at the lead level, but we have demi-soloists and we have a large core. And we even have 8-year-olds who are involved as snowdrops mm-hmm. or forest animals, and they are fully vested in it. As far as they are able, they're digging into, you know, what does an animal move like? Well, we've never learned that in ballet class before. We're certainly not rolling around on the floor in a regular ballet class, but how are we applying the movement principles that we're learning in our classical class to portray this character that requires a new type of representation? So it's exciting to see for kids of all levels, and also for those 8, 9, 10-year-olds to look up to the 12 to 14-year-olds. And the 12 to 14-year-olds are looking up to those 15 to 17-year-olds. And they're looking up to the professional mm-hmm. dancers. So there's role modeling going on layer after layer of that. And that's very exciting for us.
Musically, it's music of Alexander Glazunov. He wrote 3 ballets in his life. One is extremely well-known, Raimonda. For those who are ballet aficionados, they'll know Raimonda. I didn't touch a note for Raimonda. It's too holy. It's too traditional. I left that alone. But he wrote 2 other ballets that are not hardly ever performed. One is performed mostly as a concert called The Seasons, actually. And the other one is hardly known. It's called Rousse de l'Amour. It was performed in 1901, I think. It was one of Maris Petipas, the great choreographer in Russia, one of his last ballets before he retired. And the ballet went into oblivion. It's a wonderful music. And I think there's only one recording of it, which is a very old recording made by the old Melodia in the Soviet days. And I was lucky to come across that. So I've taken out of that ballet, out of the Seasons, and from several of Glazunov's symphonies, which are also very rarely performed, and created and edited and wove together a score which my intent was to make it sound like it was a ballet that he wrote intentionally for Marushka. And it worked really well. So the actual score itself is Glazunov, but it's a very unique facet on him that I think the musical audiences will never have heard before.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guests today are Kennett Oberle. He's the artistic director and choreographer with Ballet La Crosse. And Misty Laune. She's the founder and owner of Misty's Dance Unlimited and executive director of Ballet La Crosse. We're talking about the new semi-professional company. I'm wondering, Misty, you've lived here for many years, and Kennett, you've come and gone. We know that there's plenty of theater to consume in La Crosse. There's music going on all the time. What will having a professional ballet, a semi-professional ballet company in La Crosse, what do you think that will do for the culture of this city?
A couple of things. Number one, it's a missing piece. We have great arts in La Crosse, as you mentioned, and it's a vibrant arts community, but this is a missing piece. So for a community of our size not to have a semi-professional company, it wasn't right. So we are glad to be able to help to fill that role. And then secondly, it's going to offer unique opportunities for collaboration. And I think, again, that's something that sets us apart from the regular dance studio recital experience. So our next production is going to be working with a folk singer, well-known folk singer. Her name is Carol Montag. She does wonderful work. So we're going to be bringing her in to actually create an entire production with the kids about growing up. So not only are we filling a void in the community, but we are using this to actually integrate the different art scenes.
Historically, dance has always been oftentimes a stepchild in an arts community. It's usually the youngest organization. When you look at cities, you know, the symphony, usually the oldest. They've been around forever. And then you have your community theater and or also a professional drama ensemble. Some communities will have an opera, which are usually the next step up. And the dance company is usually the youngest. Why that is, I don't know. I think that dance is a very ephemeral art form. You can record it, you can video it, but it's not like music where you have a strong, you know, recording that you can always listen to and all that. You got to be there. You know, something gets lost in the electronic dots of video. You know, it's the experience of the live theater. You miss the actual soul of the dancer. So it is always about who you've got around and what resources you have at the moment. I'm told by many people here, this is really a dance community, actually. Mm-hmm. When touring groups come into town at Viterbo, it's always a packed house. So there are people who are hungry for it here. To mix the two together, the hunger from the audience point of view to see dance in a concert setting, and the hunger for students to want to rise up to that level, mm-hmm. if we can find that middle ground with it. And again, it's about still bringing to the community what I call real ballet, you know, not something that is just for the wow factor. It's about content, bringing up social issues, like Misty just mentioned with Carol Montag, where we're doing a work about growing up, which can be quite traumatic for children, and arriving in adulthood in one piece, you know, all that you go through, all we've all gone through. And Carol Montag, as a singer and a songwriter, she is very personal in her style and writes very well about that sort of thing. So there will be totally geared more towards a contemporary style of movement with it, much simpler production values. Just one costume, very simple costume, no sets, just wide open stage. You know, Carol will be on stage singing live, and it'll be just between her and them, kind of a thing. Very intimate. And I love that sort of thing. So for us to also be able to bring to the audience a variety of styles, not just the big, you know, meaty story ballets, which we all love, but they're also very expensive to produce. Mm-hmm. We're hoping that I think that kind of this time of year will be our story ballet kind of time to do, you know, to do something. And then the spring will be more, you know, more open-minded, contemporary movement. Misty has many talented students in the school that are contemporary-wise. They're very wonderful movers. That's something that I noticed when I first came to the school was, okay, the ballets could be stronger, but my God, are some real movers here. And movers who can really express themselves. And that's what inspired me to do this. That they need a voice. They need to go beyond the recital piece or go beyond the competition piece and really get down dirty into it, you know, because they can do so well. So I'm particularly looking forward to the spring to really open the floodgates to those movers who might not excel exactly in the ballet, but man, can they get out there and really, really belt it out, you know?
And you're aiming for two performances a year?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm wondering too, you know, you talk about how strong the arts community is here, but some people within the arts community will often say consumption could be a little stronger. More mm-hmm. people could turn out for events. So I'm wondering, as you talk about integrating dance with other segments of the arts in this community, if that's something that could help strengthen it for everyone.
Absolutely. A rising tide floats all boats, so that when dance is doing well and you're integrating the music or the visual arts, then we're all doing well. And we believe that, you know, people who are interested in the arts, by and large, are interested in all types of arts. There's very few people who are just purists. I only go to the symphony, and I would never go if the dancers show up. So we're excited to see, you know, how much more audience is out there. And I'm hoping that if there's dance school owners from other communities that are listening and they're interested in this, that they would bring their students out here so that the inspiration effect can go beyond just our own community, but can go into other schools and that they can see what is possible even for kids.
Misty Lown is the founder and owner of Misty's Dance Unlimited and the executive director of Ballet La Crosse. Kennett Oberle is the artistic director and choreographer with Ballet La Crosse. We were talking about the new semi-professional ballet company. Ballet La Crosse's debut performance is at the Weber Center for the Performing Arts next week. That's November 30th and December 1st. There are still some tickets available. You're listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Dancers, instructors, costume designers, and set makers are hard at work this week, making sure Ballet La Crosse's debut performance will be a success. Last weekend, I visited with the dancers during their rehearsal. Dozens of dancers of all ages in black or bright colored leotards were practicing their final bows in the Mirage studio.
My name is Kiara Ruff. I go to Aquinas High School. I'm a junior there, and I will be Marushka for this wonderful ballet. My dream is to become a ballerina. It has been for a while now, and this opportunity, it's my ticket to that, because without this, without Ballet La Crosse, that wouldn't be possible at all. So this is just a miracle how it all turned out. Ballet makes me me. I think that's the simplest way to put it. I live for it, and it's taught me to be passionate about everything I do and to always give 100% when I can, unless I'm physically unable to. And just that love and that freedom to express yourself, it's beautiful. And you can adapt that into everyday life. Just talking to people, I'm just so much more open than when I don't dance. I think right now we're doing bows. Come on in, stop by.
I am Abby Inglett, and today's actually, I'm turning 15. This will be my 9th year dancing, and in Marushka, I am Princess Ekaterina. I live in Coon Valley. I live in a really small town, and I never pictured something like this coming into La Crosse. Point is my favorite kind of dance. It looks painful, and sometimes it is, but you have protection for your feet. There's no way to describe it. It's like you're floating, kind of. I begged for years before I started dance to be in it. And, I mean, my parents just thought it was a phase that would pass, but it never did. And it's just something, it was born within me, I guess.
My name is Gwyneth Riley Hicks. I'm a ballet dancer. I'm everything but a lyrical dancer.
And what's your part in the Marushka Ballet?
Snowdrops. It's a flower. Well, we're basically going to be running out and then make two circles and then go into a diagonal line and do an arabesque and basically do that stuff.
It is a great time commitment. During the summer, these girls had to come, and they were here every day for 3 weeks, 3 and 4 hours a day. These girls learned a dance in 3 weeks that a larger ballet would learn in, 16.
Stephanie Hicks, and I'm from Holman.
I'm Gwyneth's mom.
What do you think of when you want to be a ballerina?
Doing point. Because it's very graceful and pretty.
I think the biggest thing for them is the point, getting those point shoes. They work on them very hard, but I think they're usually about 12 before they get those. So there's a lot of girls around here that's like, when they get their point shoes, they cry because it's like, it's such a major achievement. It's like, I got my point shoes. So, it's really cute.
Those were the voices of dancers and parents with Ballet La Crosse. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, the La Crosse Community Theater is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. We'll hear stories about the group's beginnings and what's in store for this year. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. There, you'll also find photos of the ballerinas and a link to Ballet La Crosse. Newsmakers is also on Facebook, updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. The La Crosse Community Theater is celebrating 50 years this season. Thousands attend the community theater shows each year, and hundreds more volunteer to be on stage or behind the scenes. On the occasion of its 50th anniversary, Wisconsin Public Radio's John Gatto talked with the La Crosse Community Theater's executive director, David Kilpatrick, and one of its founding board members and first president, Sally Kramer.
Sally takes us back to the events that led to the formation of the theater.
Christ Episcopal Church held a review to raise some money for a Christian education building. And a lady by the name of Sarah Cass and I wrote the script for it. And it was a tongue-in-cheek history of La Crosse. As one of the final acts was on stage, I was backstage with a man by the name of Art Hebbard. And he said, you know, I think we need a community theater. And I said, I've been thinking the same thing. Within the next week, I had organized about four people, and we proceeded. And then about a week later, we had Professor Robert Gard from the University of Wisconsin Idea Theater come to La Crosse, and we held a meeting for him in the basement of the Cooley State Bank, and it was 20 below zero, and we thought no one would come, and there were over 100 people there.
Wow.
So we knew there was definitely...
Would you ever have expected that kind of response?
No.
Especially when it's 20 below zero.
Yes. We thought, you know, we were going to sit there talking to ourselves. We had over 80 people on the stage, and the whole community, not just Episcopalians were involved in this, but the whole community was involved. And it was so successful. And I think what made it a standing room only production was that some of the fundamentalist ministers in town saw the picture that we had on the newspaper showing our chorus line, and he said that no church should be involved with such women wearing such scanty costumes. And that just made people more interested.
Unintended promotion.
Yes.
But promotion nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
So as the group gathered and you moved forward from there, you had 100 people or more attend this first meeting. Are these people who were just interested in wanting to watch theater, or are these people who came out to say, I want to be part of a theater, I want to act?
I think it was primarily people who wanted to be part of it, not only acting, but working backstage, working in advertising mm-hmm. or box office. Mm-hmm. There was just an enormous outpouring.
So let's skip ahead just a little bit then. Later in 1963, you launched the first season of the new La Crosse Community Theater.
Mm-hmm.
What was that first season like? Where did you do these plays in its first year?
We gave them in the Longfellow Auditorium, Longfellow School. We did that at first, and then we went to the Vocational School Auditorium, which is now Western Wisconsin, and at that time it was the largest theater in town, which I think was 1,200 people.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And what was attendance like in those early years?
Attendance? Oh, it was, you know, standing room only.
Wow, with 1,200 seats to fill. That's mm-hmm. that's really amazing. Mm-hmm. And the first year, what was the first play?
It was The Matchmaker.
Okay. David Kilpatrick shaking his head going, a great play to start a season with.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a neat play. We had a chance to read it last fall in anticipation of plotting and working out our farewell to the theater. It was one of the two plays we had considered. And so it's a fun play, and of course it's the foundation for the music Hello, Dolly. But it was a great opportunity because it allows a lot of people to get on stage and to participate. And that was one of the things that was fun about community theater then and still fun about community theater now is the community's involvement, both on the stage and off the stage.
And what were some of those earlier challenges, Sally, in getting people involved or the logistics of pulling together a group?
I think one of the earlier challenges was that we had at first hired the director of theater at Wisconsin State University.
Which
and
is,
his name was Bill Dixon.
Mm-hmm.
And then we wanted to expand, and he said he didn't have enough time for more productions. So we decided we needed a director of our own, but we didn't know how we would pay for it. So I went to my friend Betty Hood, Betty Train Hood, was very interested in this. And we went to her mother and asked her, I was shaking in my boots, if she would underwrite the salary of a director for the first year. And we never had to go to her for money.
Wow.
We just made it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've had a professional director, a staff member from the beginning.
Just about.
Yeah.
Except, Bill Dixon was really professional too.
How many plays were you staging in that first year or two?
How many?
I think it was only three or four that year.
Or maybe even two.
Well, you had Matchmaker and Bus Stop.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought you might have done a musical that first year, because both of those were not
musicals.
Oh,
fantastic.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So three or four shows to get started with, mm-hmm. and a director to do mm-hmm. that. And so, David, we're going to jump ahead now 50 years into, not to go through show by show, but into sure. this year's season, celebrating right. 50 years and all of the shows that La Crosse Community Theater does.
Well, one of the things that I think, I know we're going to jump the 50 years, but I want to be clear, let's not jump entirely over the huge contribution that individuals have made. Sometimes they're able to only work on one show. Sometimes they've worked for 30 years. Sometimes they've been a part of the community from the beginning and mm-hmm. supporting it as far and as much as they can. And I think that's one of the natures that we're here today because of all of the work that those have put into it from the very beginning and continued over those 49 years to bring us to the 50th season. So I wanted to take a moment and just say thank you to them because of their work and their commitment and their belief in community theater. We do get to sit here today and talk about the 50th season.
And you have 6-7 major shows. You have youth shows.
Correct.
All
right.
kinds of
yeah.
things
and,
going
and moving to our new home, which was, again, one of the dreams that had come about from the theater when they had purchased the Fifth Avenue cinema on Fifth Avenue movie on Fifth Avenue, and they purchased that. Even then, they dreamed of a new and their own space, and so it took us a while. But here we are with our new space, and part of it included some expansion and some room, so that we have two performance spaces. We have the Lickey Theater, which is 450 seats, and then we have the Veteran Studio Theater, which is 100 seats, which gives us the opportunity to do so much. We actually have 5 main stage productions in the Lickey Theater. We have 1 production in the studio, the Veteran Studio Theater. And then we added 3 children's shows to our season as well, and including a high school a production for high school students. And then we actually do some touring now and travel out to some regions and schools and things like that with some of our shows. And, of course, offer our classes and expanded that. So we grew from 1 director of theater now, and we have a full-time staff of 7, and then countless part-time staff to supplement and support. And then the, you know, the huge numbers of volunteers it takes to make every production a success.
And you've alluded to this, the way that the community theater's mission has really grown and changed right. over 50 years as well. What started as an opportunity for people to come together to produce plays today, and I'll spare you having to remember this, David, but I'll repeat it. The mission of the La Crosse Community Theater is to create productions and projects that enhance the theatrical literacy of its audience members, volunteers, students, and so on, to provide opportunities for creativity and personal growth in a fun, collaborative environment. But this is the part that really has taken off also, that as a community, to celebrate human connections through communication and interaction.
Right.
That's really expanded the scope of what the La Crosse Community Theater is about.
Well, one of the things that's special about theater is that, and this is my chance for a soapbox, it's that last bastion of human-to-human connection. You are sitting side by side with absolute complete strangers, watching and observing and experiencing human beings on the stage telling a story. And there's something very dangerous, risky, and yet very special and unique in terms of being able to experience human beings doing that. And in addition to as an audience members relating to the show, then also the community that's built from a production. You get together, you're total and complete strangers competing for the roles. And then once the roles are announced and you recognize that little of you get to win a lot and you all get to work together, and now you're complete strangers and you've created this family that's together nightly, 5-6 nights a week for 6 weeks, and then intensely you're working on a production. I mean, these are relationships that are built, and what makes it fun as a community theater is the fact that these are relationships with people you would not bump into in any other fashion, and yet you get to work with them intimately. You know, you have unemployed people working with full professional doctors, and you have students working with professors out of their field and out of their interest, and yet they're working together to create something special called a show. And that's a community you can't pass up.
When we first started, they asked me what kind of a budget we had to work with. I mean, the publicity people. And I said, we have no budget. Get it for as cheaply as you can. And there were, it was a lumber yard that donated lumber, and things were just donated to stay within that budget. And I especially remember Bob Miner, who was a brilliant, brilliant man. He worked at the train company as an engineer. And when he heard me say this, he devised spotlights out of number 10 cans.
The creative energies came out in many different ways to help support the development of the La Crosse Community Theater. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I think is important also to remember is that La Crosse is belief in the arts. And from the community standpoint, as Sally mentioned, you know, 20 degrees in negative weather, and they still want to come out and be a part of the community and part of the theater and doing what they can, however much they can. I mean, that's been a testimony to the 50 years of success as well. It's just that people will give. And there are so many that we don't even know about, you know, names of people and things that are just border on anonymous that just wanted to be part of the experience in some fashion. And I think that's a testimony to La Crosse community and all that, how much La Crosse community believes in all that's been going on in its town.
I might add, jumping back again, as to why it was successful, another reason was because people of influence and affluence were there in the beginning, like Betty Trainwood and Lorraine Dahl and, you know, lots of other people, Alan Train. I think because they were longtime citizens of La Crosse, I think just by their being involved made it seem like it was something worth doing.
David Kilpatrick is executive director of the La Crosse Community Theater, also in the studio with us on the occasion of the theater's 50th anniversary season, is a member of the founding board and the theater's first president, Sally Kramer. Sally, David kind of alluded to all of the ways that the theater has matured over the years, and it's become so much more than it started in 1963. How do you see today's La Crosse Community Theater compared to its beginnings in 1963?
It was our ultimate dream. I just never thought it would be a theater that, you have 6 or 7 people permanent on your staff?
A couple of things that the board set up from the very beginning that are actually still influencing the theater operations today and actually are recognized by state-level agencies as some smart and good thinking or best practices, as they say. One of them was, of course, the hiring of an artistic director or a director of the theater and saying that this is an important position and this is an important organization that deserves the professional respect and recognition. And that's a testimony that happened very early on, you know, to say it and say, we're going to do it right. We're going to do it to the best of our abilities. The second thing that they also set out was it's common for community theaters, for boards to be people that are, love theater and they want to do a lot of theater, and they set out and said, okay, we're going to vote for these plays, we're going to spend this budget because this is the plays we want to do. Whether people want to see them or not, we love that kind of theater. And again, very early on, the first president of the board established the policy that only a small percentage of the board members actually could be working theater volunteers. The board needed to be the influence makers and the affluence makers and the people in La Crosse that matter to, again, make it more serious and more professional. And those rules still exist today. Our board can only have so many volunteers. So it's not about a group of people voting to do plays they want to do. It's about managing and operating a company.
And to reflect the community's interests and the community's needs on all these fronts. Yes, Sally.
We invited Professor Gard from the Wisconsin Idea Theater to come and talk. He provided a scholarship at the University of Wisconsin at Madison for me to be part of a seminar that emphasized the business management of the theater. And so many community theaters dissolved because it was just actors wanting to act, and then their enthusiasm waned and it just sort of fell apart. And so he stressed, and I stressed when I came back, that business management had to be just about equal to the performance,
to the artistic part of it.
Well, it is called show business.
Yeah.
And people forget that sometimes. I wanted to touch on that. That, by the way, that seminar that Sally entered is still an active entity, and there's still some version of that because I'm actually going to that seminar this weekend, as a matter of fact. It meets every other year, and it's hosted by the University of Wisconsin at Madison. It's been going on, clearly, for quite a number of years.
The La Crosse Community Theater has, Sally, as you said a little bit ago, really has touched a lot of people in more ways than you ever might have expected.
I was particularly impressed with how many disabled people Maury Enders had in plays. I know he had a blind woman on the stage, and that was just, I thought, tremendous. And he's had other handicapped people helping out. And I just thought that was just so special.
Really working to be as inclusive.
To involve that group, too.
As possible. What do you see, if you could come back in another 50 years and see what the La Crosse Community Theater was up to, where should it be going? What would you want to see 50 years from now?
Well, if you had asked me that question 50 years ago, I would never guess that we would be having a staff of, what, 6 or 7, and a full-time director and a business manager and a costumer.
And a theater.
Set designer, yeah, and the theater. You know, those were my goals, but I never thought they would really come true.
I would imagine that with the opening of the Weber Center for the Arts this year and the move to the new theater, that certainly was a crown jewel of what you might have ever imagined.
Yes, that's true.
50 years ago.
And Sally was there for the ribbon cutting of the Lickey Theater.
Despite what we've all recognized as tougher economic times in recent years, the arts community generally doing pretty well here in the La Crosse area. La Crosse Community Theater fitting into that pretty well, and a good collaborative partner, yes?
Absolutely. I mean, that's how it's going to survive and continue to survive, is that artists working together as often as they can and sharing and pooling what resources they've got, and whether that's the facilities, whether that's props, costumes. Mostly at this point, it's often quite actors. You know, we had actors for our youth production on Saturday performances. They were actually doing another show and evenings at the Cavalier Theater. And so they would like end rehearsal and immediately get in their cars and run over to the theater, to the Cavalier, in order to do another show. So, I mean, I think that's what we'll continue to see, is just the drive and the hustle, but just the great quality theater that can be available to all audiences.
Sally?
One of the patrons that I would like to especially remember, and he's still alive and well, was Charles Gillette. He practically gave us the Fifth Avenue Theater, which we used for a number of years. He's been generous in many ways in La Crosse.
Sally Kramer is a founding board member and the first president of the La Crosse Community Theater Board. David Kilpatrick is the theater's executive director. They talked with Wisconsin Public Radio's John Gatto about the first 50 years of the La Crosse Community Theater. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. You'll also find extended interviews, photos, and a link to the La Crosse Community Theater. And if you'd like to comment on our program, or if you have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse. You can also find Newsmakers on Facebook, updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.